This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We started out the hour talking about why has law enforcement become the whipping boy for politicians. After every officer-involved shooting, politicians are fast to condemn law enforcement. And even if law enforcement is later vindicated, no apologies ever given. How much of this do you think has contributed to the hostile environment towards law enforcement? And we've been talking about this, and it's led to this conversation about there needs to be more de-escalation, there needs to be more community involvement by the police. And I was trying to make the point earlier and just asking the question, why is it that community involvement is necessary in order to have common courtesy and respect? Simple commands at a scene and trying to control the emotion. And it seems as though, and you know, it was pointed out by the expert that we had on earlier, Lance LaRusso, is an attorney, former law enforcement officer, and author of the books When Cops Kill and Blue News, talked about de-escalation actually being a two-way street. In fact, I've got a couple of texts talking about, you know, trying to analogize this to the expectation of a physician and what a surgeon does in an operating room. Only one problem. Don't sedate the patient and let's see what the outcome is. It's going to be different. And that's what you're asking officers to do, to actually be able to predict what the reaction is going to be by people out on the street in any given moment. Let's go to Rob on line two. What say you, Rob? Rob, you there? Yes, welcome to the show.
Yes, as a former academy instructor, what I felt we need to do in the community is train the community more on exactly what you're talking about. If you remember those in the line of duty videos that showed real videos of incidents, whether it turned out good, whether the police did everything right, whether the police did everything wrong, that, you know, that company didn't hold anything back. And we used a lot of those in training. And if we trained officers to go into their own communities, the high schools they graduated from, the churches they belong to, the playgrounds their kids coach at, and bring the public in, the public's going to trust that officer. They're going to know him as Lou, not Officer Lou. And they're going to trust that officer and say, this is why we ask you to do this. You know, raising three sons, you know, I told them what to expect if a police officer stopped them for any reason or if they was involved in an incident. But I also taught them why he's telling you to do that. And I think that makes more of a difference than just saying, if somebody tells you to do it, you just do it. But if you could tell that community member why, this is why this needs to happen, I think it'll make a bigger difference or make some difference in the community. At least somebody will start understanding.
But Rob, obviously you being a trainer, isn't just some of this just common sense?
A lot of it is. A lot of it is. But, you know, just like in any other profession, if you don't see it, you know, that officer got to make him see it from his point of view. We always, you know, because you can see it on the face of the cadets when they come in and that awakening happened. Man, if I don't approach this vehicle right, somebody going to be knocking on my door telling my wife I got killed. You know, you can see it happening on the face of those cadets. Well, if you can take that cadet after your training, send him back to his church and say, y'all know I need to teach Sunday school, and this is some of the things that can happen to me while I'm working on a job if people don't cooperate. you know, and explain to them. Sometimes things are just going to go bad. You know, I don't care how much training you got. If you're sitting in your car writing a report and somebody walk up to you and blow your head off, there's nothing your officer can do about that.
Right.
But in some instances that we can prevent as trainers, and if the public knew, the officer is telling you to stand here for a reason. And if you do anything other than that, that might create a problem.
Well,
and you know as well as I know, Lou, for probably the last 10 years, use of force has almost entirely been de-escalation. You know, so we train it
We, you know, and I would love for you to describe this. We trained de-escalation before that term ever became vogue.
Absolutely.
But no one believes that.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that statement that very few people actually believe that that's the case?
I do.
You know, and they think we wake up in the morning where we have a quota of how many people want, you know, we have a desire to knock up against the head or get involved in a fistic encounter or whatever it may be. And that is the last thing. That the vast majority, 99.9% of the officers, I never want to say 100%, because there are people out there that have malintent.
Right. And eventually they'll show their face.
Oh, no, they reveal themselves. And then then it's up to a credible leader to do the appropriate thing to that officer.
Right. But I do, you know, I guess my major concern is I just don't think because I've been in conversations in settings where, you know, that why this? Why do you made them do that? And then when I explained it to them, it was like, oh. So I think more of that needs to happen. You know, I think that we're getting involved.
I think educating the public, and that was one of the points that Lance LaRusso was talking about in controlling the narrative and getting your narrative out there. There are things that are easily explained away. He talked about the situation in Ferguson where there was a lot of emotion around the issue that the decedent, Michael Brown, actually laid on the street for 4 hours. Well, the police couldn't move him. They were waiting for the coroner.
Right.
The coroner couldn't get there because they had shut down the area because there were a bunch of peripheral shootings and stuff that was going on.
Right.
And you know the police were bearing the brunt of the criticism. They had no control of that situation. And as he said, simply if they would have put it out and dispelled that they were doing that out of a sign of disrespect for the decedent, I'm not sure it would have altered anything. But if that's the approach that more and more agencies start to take, I do believe that the public would be better served by having that information, as you're talking about educating them.
Right. Because you're going to, just like you said, you know, they're going to have that few bad apples in law enforcement. You got a few rebellious people, no matter how much you try to make them understand or try to explain or educate, is probably the better word.
Absolutely.
Then they're just not going to want to get it. They're not going to want to get it.
Right. No, absolutely.
You know, but
Rob,
if it's coming from, I'm a firm believer of, if it's coming from somebody they know, you know, somebody they know, you know.
Well, unfortunately, as you know, in law enforcement today, the attrition rate is so high, it's hard to get anybody to know anybody any longer because we're going through officers, you know, at a record pace. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to discuss this issue today, because the employers of the officers are now attacking the officers. And, you know, and they're going to get exactly what they desire, I guess. There's no one applying for the job.
Right.
Now, who wants to go to work for somebody that is only criticizing everything that you do and you're trained to do? And even when you do exactly what you're supposed to do as it relates to your training, they're criticizing
it. Yeah.
Because it has an ugly outcome. And I've said this all along. You can do everything by the book, and there still be an outcome that the community's not happy with. Because it is a very volatile occupation, And there's a volatility to all of these incidents.
Those leaders that used to stick by you when you was right and hang you when you was wrong are all gone.
Yep. My predecessor, I think, put it well. You make a mistake of the heart where you're knowingly and intentionally trying to do the right thing and there's an ugly outcome, I'm going to go down with you. But if you make a mistake of the head, knowingly and intentionally doing the wrong thing, I will be the first one to put you in jail.
Well said.
And at the academy graduation, that's what he told every officer as they were leaving to go out on the street.
Well said.
Rob, thank you so much for the call. Got to get to a break. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll be right back. We'll go to the talk lines when we return. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we've been talking about why police agencies don't take charge of their message, deal with the false narratives, the urban myths that are created surrounding any number of incidents, and why is it that law enforcement has become the whipping boy for politicians? 83% of the respondents on the Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll says that law enforcement has become the whipping post for politicians. Let's go to line three, talk to Shane. Shane, welcome to the show.
I like listening to you, Neil, but I have to disagree with you and your expert that you had on. The data that I've done, and I'm a criminal justice scholar, mm-hmm. does not support what he just said, because, to put it frankly,
give us what he said first.
Well, I think that he was responding to the Ferguson incident and the narrative that was coming out of Ferguson. Now, if anyone has read the Ferguson report, you know that is false.
No, I read it five times. There wasn't anything that he said that was false.
Well, he was saying that the narrative was coming out there was false. I don't think anything was false that was coming out there coming out of Ferguson.
Wait, I mean, it was false that Michael Brown had his hands up, and it was false that he was shot in the back.
Well, here's the thing about it. There's nothing in the Ferguson report that said that Michael Brown didn't have his hands up at any time.
No, and to the contrary, they talk about how his DNA was found on the officer's gun, that he reached into the car, that the officer didn't get out of the car, as the narrative was pointed out.
I would suggest respectfully
that you go read the report again.
No. I read that also. But, you know, I think we got a short time.
But what happened to those facts? I mean, I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, look, I know we have a short time.
And it was also said that the officer, you know, stopped him for walking in the middle of the street. The officer stopped him because he fit the description of another incident.
I get where you're going, but I think that we'll get into something that we'll be splitting hairs about. But what we want to talk about is, why is it that we're having such an issue between communities of color and law enforcement, if I'm not mistaken, am I correct?
Yeah, it's one of the issues, yeah.
Okay, so because we want things to be better between the law enforcement and the community of color.
Absolutely. Now, between all communities, quite frankly.
Well, your trouble really lies in communities of color. Now, we have to take in consideration the First Amendment. We have to look at people's right to free speech. Now, my research is based on ego depletion, deference theory, and deterrent theory. Now, from my research, I've seen that exercising free speech leads to ego depletion. Now, you may not understand that, but what happens is when officers come in, just like you said, and they're trying to get control of a situation, and they don't get control of the situation, it escalates. Now, I understand your point where you go like, hey, some kind of way we got to get control over this. But I think that leads us in down the road where we start to police morals and ethics instead of the law. And that in itself is a potential for a volatile situation. What do you think about that?
Well, ego depletion is what I've talked about a lot as it relates to emotional intelligence, the ability to manage one's own emotions and the emotions of others.
Correct.
So I don't disagree that there are some folks that have a problem with that. In fact, many of the candidates that would come in to the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office prior to me being sheriff, and I sat on the review board for candidates that wanted to become officers, I would ask them just a couple of questions. Do you work out? Oh, yes, sir. I can do so many push-ups, sit-ups. I bench press this. I can curl that. Okay. Do you read? Yeah, I read the sports page. That's it? The sports page? I said, so when you stop the 5-foot woman on the side of the street and she's intellectually rope-a-doping you, human nature is you're going to resort to your strength. And if your strength is your physicality, you're going to have a real problem in law enforcement. Because the community at large is not going to tolerate you putting your hands on a 5-foot, 90-pound woman. It's not going to happen now. It's not going to happen never, ever. So you better think about being a little bit more worldly in how you are developing your level of intellect, because you're going to get rope-a-doped intellectually out there. And you have to be ready. And you have to have your emotional intelligence in check all the time. Do we have officers out there, Shane, that do not do that? Absolutely, positively, in every walk of life. I have a lot of people that call into this show that have no emotional intelligence. Okay. And it doesn't take much to hit that little touchstone issue to set them off. Go ahead, Shane.
That's fantastic, Noel. That is fantastic. And I like
well,
you
thank
to say
you.
That.
Thank you, now, Shane. It's a good way to start off on Cyber Monday.
No. So what we're seeing here, does that translate from the street into a disciplinary action in terms of the court? Because what people in minority communities believe that I'm not going to get any justice, and the data supports that they are not.
But you see, there's the false premise. Justice is not an outcome. Justice is a process.
That's correct.
Okay. But that goes to the education of the community. We're crying for justice because we have a predetermined outcome that we so desire. That is not achievable by law enforcement, nor attainable.
So we
have to reach a probable cause standard in making the arrest, plain and simple. And, you know, oftentimes people think that their one case is the most important case that ever walked the face of the earth. When you make 30,000 felony arrests a year, it's another felony arrest. I reminded my officers all the time, don't fudge a case to get one more felony arrest. It's not worth it. You're in the credibility business. You're not in the policing business. You're only as good as your credibility.
That's another excellent point. So what do you think it does to the credibility of your agency when someone is wronged in the public's eye and there is no outcome?
Well, part of the problem is perception becomes reality, but I cannot control all perceptions. This is a volatile business.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that we have folks that are perpetuating stories both in the informal media as well as the formal media that don't know what they're talking about. And then we have politicians that are soundbite politicians who take a poll on everything, and they take a stand based on a poll as opposed to taking a stand as to what is actually right and correct and just, because they are short-term thinkers. They're not long-term thinkers, and short-term thinking will get you in nothing but trouble, plain and simple. And that's where we tend to lose ourselves. That's why everybody thinks by looking at the text that I had Lance LaRusso on for the wrong reason. It was all about taking charge of their message, law enforcement, about controlling their own destiny, to dispel the urban myths and the false narratives that are out there in the ones that they can without compromising the case. Because we're connecting dots that are not connectable. And we're trying to hold law enforcement accountable and responsible for things that they're not accountable and responsible for.
Well, let me ask you one last question. You have a lot of experience. Is there a way to satisfy the public to say that, hey, we can protect you from the bad element in law enforcement? Because there is a bad element in law enforcement, and you have someone who is a criminal.
There is a bad element in every occupation.
Just let me finish.
Yes, go ahead.
When you start to talk about the criminal element, and you take that criminal element and you put a badge on that criminal element, what does that elevate him to?
Well, if I was the predictor and I had the crystal ball of human behavior, I wouldn't be sitting here behind this mic today.
Well, you know, out of fairness, that if you put a badge that comes along with all that authority to a criminal, you have just elevated him to a position that is beyond any other criminal. So it is important for law enforcement or the citizenry to have protections in place to guard against those that are sworn to protect.
There's no doubt. I mean, that's common sense. You want to screen. You have the obligation to screen the candidates that come in. You do so. But the best tools have not achieved a high competency rate in predicting human behavior. If that was the case, we would have study after study after study where we could predict criminal behavior. And we could be able to address those issues at a much earlier intervention. We've not been able to get any with any probability, probably in excess of 70%. And 70% is being very liberal.
Anything over 51 is in the right direction.
No, I agree. But there is no court of law. There's no human right advocate group that's going to allow you to engage in a program or otherwise with that statistical number. It's not going to happen. And that's why I said we are holding law enforcement accountable for things that they're not accountable for. We can only account for our own actions, and in many respects, simple commands that are not adhered to make absolutely no sense at all, other than wanting to be disruptors. And if our role in life is to be disruptive and to be disruptors, what we are going to see, you talk about it in the exercise of a First Amendment right or an exercise of this right or anything else. If I went about exercising my First Amendment right anytime that I so choose, I would be walking around with black eyes, a busted face, and my body hurting all the time.
And it would be illegal.
And no, I would be perfectly within my rights.
Yeah, but it would be illegal to assault you.
Sure it would be. But that's the whole notion of emotional intelligence, of managing. Common sense dictates that I don't say what I want, how I want, when I want. There are a lot of things. There's more things in my life, and I'm sure yours as well, that go unsaid as opposed to said. And the truth of the matter is I am a better person. I am a better man. I'm a better individual for exercising that discretion.
Well, but that's
and it has nothing to do with gender, race, or any of that stuff. It's just exercising that discretion and understanding that there are those that are in authority and those that are not.
But that's a personal discretion that you decide to exercise. That doesn't say that you legally cannot. Now,
I understand, Shane, but you're drawing a distinction that in an ordered and structured society, if we all went about doing what we're legally entitled to do each and every day, contrary to what's in the best interest of themselves, others, and common sense, this would be a very unhealthy place to live. Shane, I got to get to a break. Thanks so much for calling. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And I think, you know, when we talk about progressive policing, I think it's going to make this situation even worse because the expectation is being developed that they don't have to adhere to certain laws. As an example, San Francisco Bay Area Rapid Transit System, otherwise known as the BART, has had a 115% increase in crime, culminating in three homicides the other week there. And it's because they've taken this hands-off approach to what is referred to as interrelated quality of life issues. They had a grand jury actually look into this, and it quantified the scale of the problem, noting that the rise in crime has driven BART ridership down by 8% since 2016, despite population growth in the Bay Area. Why is that? Because a number of the crimes there, they're not going to enforce. Whether that be turnstile jumping, fare avoidance, not paying the fare, and any number of other public urination, solicitation of sex, blocking a sidewalk, public camping, the list goes on and on. The incoming DA there in San Francisco says that they're going to focus on police misconduct and corporate malfeasance. But the quality of life issues are not going to be enforced. So what you're going to see is more and more of this tolerance for crime in these particular geographic environmental areas. Same thing's going on in New York. They've decided there that they're not going to do it. And in New York, there's been an increase in crime in the public transit system as well, albeit not 115% like San Francisco has experienced, but a 10% increase in total crime in the last year as well. A lot of folks really believe that we've kind of hit the plateau on this reduction in crime across the country. I make this observation for the following reason. This situation that we've been talking about for the last hour and a half is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. Because we've created this expectation that I just outlined, that we look the other way as law enforcement individuals for certain crimes. And that's going to continue to be a significant contributor to friction out on the street. Because the expectation is that we should be exercising our discretion and not making these arrests. And then the issue of race is going to be interjected as well. And we will not look at the statistics that are significant as it relates to these arrests and or convictions. And you will not have people riding on public transit. You can blame the mayors there, Bill de Blasio in New York, the mayor in San Francisco. That's why I've been an advocate of dealing with these quality of life issues here. Because once the erosion starts, it doesn't go away. And it increases the conflict. Let's go to line two, talk to Larry. What say you, Larry?
Hey, how's it going, Noah?
Good, and you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Thing I want to say, what police have to do, and it is both ways, communities and police. The police have to know the community. You can't keep putting a different police in that area, and he don't know the people. He don't know how to deal with the people. And same thing with the community. If the community know how to deal with this police officer, see that he's straight, or they could talk to him, you know, and let him know what's going on, they gonna talk to him. People don't want to live in the hood with under fear. I don't know why people just suggest that you know, oh, they don't mind living in poverty and living with the crime. Nobody want to live like that, you know. And then, yeah, the politicians, they use that, well, give the police officers, but the police officers put themselves in that predicament. You know, no, there was a saying back here in Houston when we was younger, and I was telling that to my son. Both of my son and my daughter been in the military. I said, you know, I have to tease them and tell them how to deal whenever they get stopped. Because the reason was, like I told them, see, I'm 49 years old. Back in my day, they just beat you and put you in jail, and then you came home. Now, they'll kill you. This is everywhere.
When you know? Have you ever looked at the statistics of police shootings?
I don't really look at it.
Do you think anybody really knows how many there are in context to how many police interactions that go on in this country every day?
Oh, no. I mean, I know it's a big talk. I mean, a big difference between the interactions with police officers and than to the people that's actually getting shot. I know that. I mean, it don't take a scientist to know that.
Right.
But
I just asked the question because the generalizations that you just outlined, I think, are very dangerous and inflammatory in many respects and very disrespectful to police. I mean, when we say know the community, you know, if there's a level of respect and courtesy that works both ways, it's bilateral.
Yes.
I don't need to know you, Larry from Houston, to be respectful and to be courteous.
Yes.
When I get on the elevator every morning, it doesn't matter to me the race of the females that are waiting in the elevator bank with me. I step back and let all the ladies get on first. And when we get off the elevator, I step back and let all the ladies of all colors get off first. It doesn't matter to me. Courtesy and respect should not have a race connotation to it, but it is bilateral. And we have to understand that there are things that have to be achieved in a timeline at a crime scene that is not necessarily discretion of the officer, but must happen for the purposes of the investigation. Plain and simple. But we keep wanting to interject having to know one another to be courteous and respectful of one another. I don't need to know people to be respectful and courteous of them until they violated the discretion that I've exercised at that point in time, and they want to raise it to another level. Typically, what I would do is just remove myself in that interaction and just leave, because I don't have a point to prove to anybody. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm comfortable knowing who I am, and I don't need to get the last word with somebody out on the street. If they want to play the fool, play the fool, but they're not going to do it at the expense of Newell Norman. And I don't think I'm less of a person for doing it. I just leave. Because if we're not going to engage in a respectful and courteous way, there's no sense in having the engagement. We've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back, and we've been talking about why has law enforcement become the whipping boy for politicians. In fact, you listen to some of these folks, and some running for president and otherwise, there ain't anything that's done right. Michael Bloomberg is now apologizing for his stop and frisk policy. Maybe it was the breadth and depth of the enforcement that went on there, not the policy in and of itself. You still need to have a reasonable suspicion in order to make the stop under the Constitution. So it's not like you just get to go out there and stop whoever the heck you want to stop for whatever reason you want to stop them for. That's not how it works. And every stop doesn't necessarily equate to a frisk. But when we talk about it, because it has become a politically unpopular thing, all of a sudden law enforcement is the villain. And we don't talk about the downstream implications as it relates to maybe how many lives have been saved, how many guns have been removed, things of that nature, how much street intelligence has been gathered as a result of the deployment of the policy. Now, I admit sometimes it can be utilized too much. But that doesn't mean that stopping and frisking is bad. There's a balance in the deployment of every operational strategy that exists out there, whether you're in the military, law enforcement, in sales, whatever it may be. And it is just coming to that realization. Let's go to Charles in line one. What say you, Charles?
Hey, Neil, how you doing?
Doing great.
All right, I was listening to a lot of your callers, and I just want to say, man, I think it needs to be respect on both sides.
Sure.
Everybody needs to learn how to respect each other. And, I mean, you do have some of the – I'm not speaking on all officers, but you do have some of these officers out here, man, that approach people with this tough guy mentality. And off top, that's going to trigger something in the people just as well as some of the people in the community trigger it in the officers. So I think it's just all about how we interact with each other. Race doesn't really shouldn't play a part, even though it does. And last but not least, man, we just need to all get along because we all got to live in this earth together, you know?
Yeah, I think, and I don't know you, but I think you want the same things I want: a safe place to live, work, and raise our family.
Exactly.
As cliche exactly. as it sounds, it's really not that difficult.
It's not. It's not at all.
You know, but somehow or another, we continue to run amok and we're going astray. And I don't have all the answers, but I think through, you know, conversation, communication, talking about it, maybe it stimulates something. I don't know. But it just seems to me that we're focused on a lot of the wrong things. I really believe, Charles, that we ought to be trying to figure out how our officers can do what we expect of them in a safer, more efficient way, as opposed to constantly criticizing them. Charles, thank you so much. We'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.